From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. This is indeed the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are pleased and honored to welcome in Rob Kaczmark, who is one of the producers of Soul of a Champion. Rob, good to hear from you.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on. This is awesome.
How close was I on your last name?
You got it.
I get an A?
You get 10 points.
Now I get 10 points. Or maybe a grand slam. Yeah.
That's perfect. Good segue.
A Soul of a Champion. Tell us, Gil Hodges, believe it or not, I'm dating myself. I have Gil Hodges in my baseball card collection.
That is awesome.
And it wasn't a card I bought, I mean, from a collector or something. It was a card I collected as a little kid. I paid a nickel and got like 6 or 7 baseball cards and a really bad piece of bubblegum.
Why is the bubblegum always terrible baseball cards?
It was flat and kind of powdery, and you could break it in half. It was like, it was like a real thin layer of ice or something. It was terrible.
You might chip your tooth on it, too.
Oh, yeah. I've paid dental bills ever since then. I should sue.
That's too funny. Gil, so I don't remember Gil from I'm 38, so but I grew up in Chicago. I still live in Chicago. So the White Sox, I knew White Sox history very well.
Uh-huh.
You know, Carlton Fisk was an idol of mine, in many Minnesota, all that stuff. So anyways, I had no idea who Gil was, but a baseball fan, and got connected and known Catholic Gatherings for Christ. Kevin and Ray, and then also David. And they knew about Gil. They presented this idea of like who Gil was, his character, and they really intrigued me, and made me want to be part of this project. And the funny thing is, like, the more I worked on it, the more I got involved, just the more, you know, I fell in love with Gil and his story and what he meant, and just the incredible things that he means for so many people everywhere. And once this film came out, just seeing the impact of how many people just cherish him, it's just incredible. So. Yeah, I can go on and on about how great Gil is.
Well, so tell us first about Catholic Athletes for Christ.
Yeah, so I work with Spiritual Studios, but Catholic Athletes for Christ is the people that we partner with, and they do a lot of really awesome stuff. So, I mean, as the name would imply, Catholic Athletes for Christ. So a lot of Catholic Athletes that play professionally now or that are retired. So, you know, ones that are retired but are still, they do a lot with it, like Mike Sweeney, you know, who is just an awesome person and does so much. And so they do everything from, you know, making contact with priests that are on, you know, they're part of the teams, or they do annual retreats. So they do a ton of stuff. I'm not doing service to all the great things that they do, but they're involved so much and have so many contacts that all the major, you know, baseball teams and the people that support it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm familiar with the Campus Crusade for Christ, of course, which is not a strictly Catholic organization, but has done a lot of things on college campuses.
Nice. Yeah, they're not as familiar with them, but I think, yeah, similar, except, you know, in the professional sporting arena.
Right. And what's Spirit Juice Studios?
So Spiritual Studios is a Catholic production company. So we've been around for going on 15 years, and essentially we create Catholic films, promo videos, really Catholic, any sort of video content, and have been doing so for quite a while. And so the way we survive as a business is people hire us to make projects for them. So a lot of our more notable clients would be we've worked a lot with Bishop Barron from War on Fire, The Knights of Columbus, USCCB, and then, you know, some individual people. So there was a film called The Brow Removed, which was like a 3-minute short film showing when, you know, heaven meets earth and the mass and stuff. And so it's, you know, just an individual person, but it you know, made its rounds in the Catholic world online.
What's the title of it again?
That was called The Veil Removed.
Uh-huh.
And I think you go to thearrowmove.com, it pops up. I mean, there was one that got, like, millions of views online. And really, it was an incredible project. There was, prior to it, the only thing that really existed was paintings that showed, you know, during Mass, like the elevation of the host with the priest, you'd see Christ on the cross and all the angels and saints and just heaven meeting earth. And so we did that in a movie, in a short film, you know, in about a 3 or 5 minute short film that showed that. And, you know, so a little bit of a story within there, too. So really, you know, just incredible opportunities to work on these sort of things that can help bring people closer to God and into their Catholic faith.
So is the film about Gil Hodges to advance his cause for the Hall of Fame or for sainthood?
Well, first it's the Hall of Fame, but you know what? I don't think sainthood's too far off, right? I mean, his character really showed that.
That's kind of sainthood for a baseball player.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's definitely sainthood for a baseball player. And I think you probably know, like, the vote is a couple days away. It's on Sunday. It's December 5th. And so people, you know, are clamoring all around the Internet to find out what the vote going to be.
Now, how does the Hall of Fame has kind of a strange voting? You're only eligible so many years, and then if you don't make it by X, you're done, right?
It's about as clear as mud, from my perspective. But what I do know is that, in theory, you know, you're never off the list per se, right? But the reality is, there's so many people that are up for candidacy. And the reason why this year is so important and why it was, you know, we wanted to make sure it got on time is because they're calling it, I believe it's called the Golden Era. So people from Gil's era, which is not a normal exception from my understanding that they have during the vote. And so
it's a different vote than the I don't know what you would call it, the regular Hall of Fame or something. It's part of the Hall of Fame, but it's the Golden Era.
Exactly, yeah. So... yeah, so a lot kind of rides on these next couple of days, and the flow was to drum up awareness of Gil and hopefully rally a lot of support. So the people that, you know, vote on it, which I believe is like 16 people or so, can see that, listen, you know, there's a desire, you know, like the argument's there, you know, that's otherwise he wouldn't even be considered. And, like, there's a desire there to have him included in the hall and, you know, and people want him there.
Well, you know, speaking of the hall, just the regular Hall of Fame, his numbers are, you know, I'm not a voter, but I follow it. And his numbers are quite good, and his accolades are incredible because he's been on the All-Star team a number of consecutive years. You know, it's a pretty impressive record, 370 home runs. Puts him up there with some of the big hitters. Twice had over 40 home runs in a season. Puts him up there as a slugger, you know, even though you don't really necessarily think of him that way. Had some really great years and played for crying out loud, played for the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Yeah. Well, you know, his numbers speak for themselves. That's what numbers do. You know, are there people with better numbers? Sure, but his numbers still are in that same caliber that belong there. And you bring up the Brooklyn Dodgers, which I think is a really interesting point because the year the Brooklyn Dodgers won the World Series, he was the only one that drove in the two runs. So, you know, he has a certain just like specialness. That's probably not the right word to say, but like uniqueness, I think, to not only his record, but how he impacted these teams. And when you can't, you know, you mentioned the Brooklyn Dodgers and what he did, you know, in the World Series there, you know, you can't not mention the Miracle Mets and how he led that team from, you know, really some call them the lovable losers, and in 2 years to World Series champions. It's a testament to what he did to that team.
And he was the general manager there, right?
Yes, yeah. He was the... And, you know, he played, it was like, he went through a time where, you know, I think he played for the Mets. I'm forgetting a little bit now, so I apologize. I think he played for the Mets a really, really brief period, and then they brought him on as the
Yeah, I think he had maybe a couple of years with the Mets right at the end of his playing career. Yeah,
I believe so. Yeah. So, you know, it's Gil. Another thing, like in the film, we talk about where it's like you don't name bridges after people that were good or just notable, and you don't name schools, and you don't you got to really put a mark on something, both in your career as a baseball, but who you were outside of that, to have that sort of recognition still to this day. I mean, there's a bridge named after Gil, both in his hometown where he grew up, and then also in where he made himself a home in out in New York. So, he's just an awesome guy, man. I can keep going on
where,
and on.
Where was he from?
Princeburg, I'm messing it up. In Indiana. He's from Indiana. I'll leave it at that. I'm butchering the town, so my apologies on that name. But yeah, from Indiana.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I was looking at some Gil Hodges memorabilia and stuff. I came across a wonderful recollection from Vin Scully, the long time announcer for the Dodgers, who started with the Dodgers in Brooklyn, followed them to Los Angeles, and covered them for, 67 years, and finally retiring, a very strong Catholic himself. He says, "I am often asked who the best ball player was that I watched during my broadcasting career. In looking back over my 67 years behind the microphone, I was truly blessed to watch firsthand so many of the all-time greats performing at their very best on the biggest stages in the game's history. It is truly impossible for me to single out just one player. However, in terms of the players I watched who performed at a high level on the playing field, but at an even higher level off the field in how they lived and carried out their lives, my response is an easy one: Gil Hodges." Wow.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
I mean, I got chills. That's like, that says something. I mean, that really says something.
Think of all the players that Vin Scully saw in 67 years. It's mind-boggling.
And Vin's been, if you could look up on, if you just type in Vin Scully Hodges on YouTube, you'll see him on several interviews that he's, done, just speaking about, like, why isn't Gil in the Hall of Fame? Like, that's like what, like, it's kind of like a loose end that he wants to tie up before, it's like, he should be in there. He deserves it because the Hall, that's what it's made for, people that you can look at and say, that's a character to follow, both on the field and off the field. And, baseball is sort of the American dream sport, and America's pastime. It's something that for generations ever continue, and having people like Gil in there, I think it's so important I'm a father of two boys who are just starting to appreciate baseball and enjoying it. And I would love to be able to, look at this guy. Look at Gil, because he is someone you would like to, follow suit after. And I think it's just so important. And, the film, so we do Catholic-based stuff. That's, the basis of the stuff. And the film is primarily about, baseball and Gil. But the reason we wanted to be involved is because his Catholic faith was so fundamental in how he carried himself. And really, for all of us, all of us striving to be saints, like, that's the idea. Like, your faith may not be something that is talked about in every second or part of your day, but it should be part of it and how you conduct yourself to others. And I think Gil was just a living example of that.
So what do we know about Gil Hodges and his faith?
So he was Catholic. He attended a mass every week. And that was, you might say, many Catholics attend mass every week. Okay, well, not every Catholic is on a professional baseball team traveling and may not have access to the site, or easy access to that. That didn't affect Gil. Gil was there all the time. Not only that, but, just in back when, I know it's still the practice of not observing many meat on Fridays, but when it was very much not just a Lenten thing, there's a story in the film where, actually Ben tells it, because he knows it firsthand. They had a big doubleheader, a big game, and someone goes to give him, a nice big steak dinner, and he goes, no, thank you. And the person's like, no, I mean, you're hungry. You just had a huge day. Like, you need to eat. He goes, I'm too close to the boss. I can't, because it was a Friday. And so, you know, small things like that are big things, right? You know, it's how you, so many stories of just how the friendship he had with Jackie Robinson and different things, and just sort of like, you could take it from a personal piety thing of how he conducts himself, but also, you know, if you want to call it a social justice thing of like how he treats others and how he makes everyone feel included and things like that. So it just bled in so many different areas of his life. And his son even said, it was God, family, and country. He goes, and that didn't get altered. And so, you know, hearing his son say that how many years later, that was his dad, you know, sort of thing for life, is, I think, just shows how important it was for him.
Yeah, the stuff about Jackie Robinson and Gil is pretty touching. That Jackie Robinson, of course, the first African American to play in the major leagues, and took a tremendous amount of abuse getting there, took a tremendous mm-hmm. amount of abuse after he got there. Not that being a superstar makes you immune from abuse, but my goodness, he wasn't just the first African American baseball player; he was a tremendous baseball player, Jackie Robinson. Mm-hmm. And it's Gil just kind of took him under his wing and really tried to protect him from all of that, even going so far as to do grocery shopping for him at spring training in Florida when Jackie wouldn't have been allowed in the grocery store.
Yeah. It's, you know, we look at that and say, well, like, first off, that's crazy that I was even like that. And secondly, like, well, that's the right thing to do. And, you know, I would say, I think people of faith look at that as it's the right thing to do because it's the Christ-like thing to do to always look sure. at anyone, no matter who they are, anything at all. But Christ is in that person. And it's our job and it's our duty as Christians, as Catholic Christians, to serve another person like that. And so I think I would just assume that was, you know, the sort of like moral backing for Gil to serve others like that and do anything he could to make sure that people are taken care of.
It's interesting, too, that with the Hall of Fame, the voting criteria, in addition to all the stats and records, awards, et cetera, it also includes consideration for the integrity, sportsmanship, and character of each nominee. Sounds like Gil's a slam dunk.
A grand slam.
A grand slam. Yeah, you don't slam dunk in baseball, do you?
I suppose you could. I mean, you know, I feel like some of those mascots do some stuff
some
like that.
Some of the mascots do. My favorites, I forget, it must be Milwaukee where they race the sausages. I love that one. Or is that Philadelphia? I'm not sure. Somebody where they have four or five sausages racing.
That's good. Yeah, they've really upped the ante. I feel like when I was growing up, the mascots weren't quite as entertaining as they are now.
Yeah, I mean, mascots used to shag foul balls. Now it's like, holy cow, they're the show. That's half the reason kids want to go to the ballpark is to see the mascots.
I know. Yeah, they do some pretty entertaining stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Well, so... tell us how you put together this film. Do you have footage? Do you have footage of Gil playing?
Yeah, so, you know, the footage of Gil, we didn't. So there was a lot of stuff with that MLB. So we didn't have anything personally, and Gil's family only has photographs of Gil. But there's a ton of footage on, you know, Major League Baseball. They owned it. And so we got in contact with them pretty early to see if, you know, that can be licensed, which it can. At a very, you know, premium cost, but again, right. And so, you know, we relied on a lot of that to sort of show the footage of Gil, you know, in action, but that could only cover so much, and so we constructed the documentary by interviewing people that were in his life, and so, you know, we do it, Vin is sort of, I don't want to say the backbone, but I think Vin and Gil Jr., you hear from them the most, because they had so much interaction with them, and so... a lot of the story was constructed based on their interviews. And then, you know, we also interviewed, you know, Kuhn from the New York Mets, people that he had coached. We interviewed Tommy Lasorda before he passed, which was just, like, such an honor to be able to interview Tommy Lasorda. the era. I grew up on Sega Genesis. One of my very first games was Timely Soda Baseball, you know, like, whatever, age 5 or 6 right. or something. So the interview with him was just a really crazy thing. So people like that, that played with him, that he coached, and then also people that he impacted. So from his hometown that he never met, but his life and his story is one that, you know, it lives on and continues that. So, you know, like a lot of documentaries, you tend to you schedule the right interviews, you know, ask questions you think are relevant for the story that you have, you know, roughly constructed. And then a lot of it and so much of it comes together in the post-production process where you're like, okay, let's weave these stories together. What, you know, what makes a good narrative? Because, you know, although Gil has a very, you know, powerful life and story, how do you make that compelling in 28 minutes so people feel like there's 3 acts, like, you know, beginning, middle, and end? And so that was our job as filmmakers to do that and to give the audience that experience.
So he... If he were alive today, he'd be about 97 years old, I'm guessing. Maybe, yeah, I think 97 years old. Died very young, died at age 47.
Yeah, it's that's scary. Every time I hear that part in the film, and I just, I'm like, man, like, that is just, yeah. And how, you know, he, in the film, Gil Jr. talks about his last time seeing his dad alive, which is just like, really, I don't know, like, so basically the story is Gil Jr. and his dad are walking towards the elevator, and Gil Sr. says, take care of your mom. And Gil Jr. is like, okay, but I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And what do you mean? Just take care of your mom.
Wow.
Okay. Walk in the elevator, because that's the last time he ever saw his dad alive. So, like, I mean, I don't know, you know, like that's the sort of stuff like, this is, you know, maybe from Gil Sr., it was just something that, like, just to say it, you know?
Right. Wow. So maybe he had a premonition.
Maybe. It's one of those,
Because he died of apparently a massive heart attack.
Yeah. So I mean, you can't predict that. It's one of those things. Where
you
you're
can't
like, oh,
predict it unless maybe he had been having some issues and didn't tell anybody. And
you
don't know. But and that's not very far removed from the end of his baseball career.
No, he was still in. I mean, he was still. I believe they were in spring training, or it was still active. Like it wasn't
sure.
Like yet his career had stopped. So. Yeah, very wild.
Yeah, well, it's a. So what has? Do you think you've gotten your film to enough of the voters?
You know what? I think so. I've been keeping tabs of like you know anytime it gets out and different stuff, and it's really hits. I mean, MLB Network did a big thing on it right when it came out, talking about it. Several news stations did pieces on it. It's been a lot of large you know publications for sports, for baseball specifically. Large figures, you know, on Twitter have retweeted it, expressed their support for it. So I think it's made it, you know, we kind of try to time in the right, you know, right after the World Series that it came out. So people weren't, you know, it didn't conflict there. So I think it reached all the people it needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And right in time where, you know, at this point we just wait and see. We actually have a film crew. They'll be at Gil Jr.'s home on Sunday. So, because if he gets in, they'll call him. I believe they'll call him first.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if he got in. If he doesn't get in, then he doesn't get a phone call. So we do want to be there because we just feel like that's just such a monumental, like, time that if he gets in to be able to capture that and that excitement would just be, you know, once in a lifetime.
Yeah, that's when you get 4 calls from telemarketers.
Right.
Every time the phone rings, you jump and, oh, it's them.
Oh, my God. We filmed the wrong thing. They're on call waiting. They pick up the tile markers and the hall
can't get through.
Yeah.
Please call us back.
Oh, man. Yeah, you get a voicemail.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's hope and pray that he gets in, and let's hope that he also gets up into the big Hall of Fame, which is what this whole life we're living is all about, you know, and it's nice to have examples like him. And, you know, it's interesting because, like I say, I didn't go looking for a Gil Hodges card, but when I saw that you guys were making this film, I said, I know I have a Gil Hodges card, and I've got a Roy Campanella card, and Moose Skowron, who played for the Yankees, and Whitey Ford, and all those guys of that era, Ted Kluszewski, and because there was something about Gil Hodges that I was attracted to. I never met him. I never lived in Brooklyn. Wasn't particularly a Brooklyn Dodgers fan or a Los Angeles Dodgers fan, but there was something about Gil Hodges that was attractive to me as a child, you know, and so much of that is demeanor, you know. It just is, you know. You see him and you go, this is a good person. You see him on TV or you hear about him, and this is a good person. And so, if he could affect me from 3,000 miles away, he must have been the real deal.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, and it's still to this day, you know, that he's you remember him. You know, it's not like, oh, someone you thought of, and yeah, at the time, you know, but like he sticks with you, and I think it shows that, you know, when you have an impact like that on other people's lives that really goes deep, and you're really a truly good person, then people know that.
Yeah, as soon as I heard about this project, I said, "Oh, Gil Hodges, let's get him on. Let's get him on now." You know, I mean, this is. I mean, it wasn't like, "Oh, there was some player in the 50s, and I've never heard of the guy," but yeah, we'll. let's put him on, you know. But I was like, Gil Hodges, I like, let's do it.
So I
wish you guys well. I wish Gil Jr. well. I will not call him that morning.
Try not to.
I will try not to.
Wait till Monday.
Don't give his number out. We're doing a survey to see how many people listen to the Bishop's Hour. Oh, man. Well,
that's good.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And I hope our paths cross. Thanks for doing this project. And thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today. We really, really appreciate it.
Oh, my gosh. No, I thank you for having me on. This is awesome. I mean, first off, just love talking about Gil. And second, appreciate just the support. And, yeah, we'll all say a prayer for Gil and see what happens then on Sunday.
And when you have another project, please keep us in mind. We do more than baseball here on the Bishop's Hour.
But love it. Yeah, I definitely will. There are a couple things coming up, too, so be in touch with you guys when we talk about that.
I remember about, it was at the time of the World, it was right before the World Series during the playoffs. We had our Bishop Soto on, and he's from Orange County in California, not Orange County in Florida. And the Dodgers were playing the Giants. And so in this area, it's big Giants fans. We're about 70 miles from San Francisco. And a lot of hatred for the Dodgers. I mean, that's a kind of a strong word for a Catholic, but, you know, I mean, it's kind of...
Oh, yeah, cup and socks. I get it.
You know how it goes. And so I said to the bishop, who's from Orange County, which isn't really the Dodgers, it's more the, you know, the Angels and et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I said, so what could be better than a city named after St. Francis playing against the city of Angels? You know, what could be more Catholic than that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's subtle, but there it is. You know, people say, oh, San Francisco Giants, Los Angeles Dodgers. You know, and they don't even know they're saying the words, the Angels, mm-hmm. St. Francis. You know,
so, in plain sight, the Catholic stuff all around.
And I asked him which team he was rooting for or predicting, and he took the Fifth Amendment.
Wise. Keep his. Yeah.
A very wise man.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, great talking to you, and I will be sitting by the phone on Sunday hoping for a call.
Nice. That's awesome.
Hey, take
awesome.
Care.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate it. And, yeah, have a blessed Advent.
Hey, same to you and your family. God bless. That's Rob Kastmark, who is the producer, one of the producers of the film Soul of a Champion, about Gil Hodges, who played in the 50s and early 60s for the Brooklyn Dodgers and then the Los Angeles Dodgers. I still can't imagine, Gabe, you know, you're a little kid growing up and you're a Brooklyn Dodgers fan or a New York Giants fan, that not the football team, but the baseball team. And then one day in 1957, you don't have a team to root for anymore. They're 3,000 miles away. It's just, it's amazing. Rip your heart out. So that's a great story, though. And I heard great things about Gil Hodges and his Catholic faith and how he really was a living example to everybody of that. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Julie Sly, editor of Atlet Herald Magazine, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Julie. Appreciate that. We have some wonderful ordination anniversaries in December. The bishop's office always puts these out every month, and I just love to share them with people. Some of them are more recent. Some of them have been with us for a long, long time. Father Zone Canicelli, December the 12th, Our Lady Guadalupe feast day in 1987. Father Diego Baptista, December 14th in 1969. Father John Sullivan, December 16th in 1972. Father Julius Kaburu, December 18th of 2010. Father Thomas X. Davis, December 20th of 1958. Father Michael Hebda, December 20th of 1996. Father Lawrence Kathinji, December 20th of 2003. Father Ajuka, December 20th of 2003. Father Walter Borkowski, December 21st of 1985. Father Jose Campos, December 21st of 1990. Father Abraham Chaco, December the 26th of 1988. Father Jose Estaniel, December 27th of 1985. Father Aldrin Basarte, December 27th of 1996. Father Kavungal Devi, December 27th of 1966. Father Joseph Sebastian, December 27th of 2008. And Father Josie Vatothu, December 28th of 2009. Some deacon anniversaries, ordination anniversaries as well. Deacon Daniel Blanton, December the 5th of 2005. Deacon Amy Garcia, December the 6th of 2003, and Deacon Rodolfo Q, December the 9th of 2017. Congratulations to to all of them, and really thank all of them for their great work here in the Diocese of Sacramento. It's remarkable how many wonderful priests we have had, and how many wonderful deacons we have had here in the diocese throughout the years. The California Catholic Conference has put out they're putting out a number of articles about their rich history here, their 50th anniversary. The California Catholic Conference, which for 50 years has advocated for the common good in the California legislature, also offers pastoral initiatives that help Californians in their daily lives. The conference represents all the bishops in the state of California. Every day in parishes and dioceses, countless acts of mercy are offered. And this is all the bishops of all the dioceses in California. Countless acts of mercy are offered to those in need through parish ministries, outreach programs, or individual Catholics accompanying a brother or sister. There is never an end to the good work that can be done in Jesus' name. Certain issues span our state, and the bishops of California come together to create solutions and opportunities for growth. Over the last 50 years, the California Catholic Conference, together with dioceses and parishes, have accompanied those who are mentally ill, comforted people who are terminally ill, helped migrants make a new life, provided life-changing support for at-risk youth, crime victims, prisoners, and their families, and helped parents create strong, healthy families. The pandemic has changed our lives in ways we have yet to understand. This is also true for the work of the Catholic parishes and dioceses. California's bishops were continually conscious of the challenges faced by elderly and homebound parishioners, families with young children in school, those who had lost their jobs, and those without access to quality medical care. They relied on the strength of pastoral programs already created and sought innovation to meet current needs. In 2018, the bishops of California issued a pastoral letter on mental illness, hope and healing, a pastoral letter from the bishops of California on caring for those who suffer from mental illness. It calls for an end to the stigma of mental illness, and greater cooperation and understanding between the medical and religious communities. It specifically addresses the lingering false belief that suicide is a certain path to hell. Auxiliary Bishop John Dolan of San Diego also co-edited a pastoral handbook responding to suicide after losing three family members to suicide. The pastoral letter from the CCC has given him an opening to raise this issue widely among parishioners, he said. He goes on to say, if pastors have an appreciation for the science of psychology and don't dismiss it in favor of judgment, the way we address people with mental disorders will be better. This is Bishop Dolan said that in an interview with the Southern Cross. These pastoral tools and the understanding they have created throughout our California Catholic community allowed parishes to minister to the mental health needs of their communities all throughout the pandemic and beyond. In 2016, shortly after California's legalization of physician-assisted suicide, the conference collaborated with Catholic healthcare institutions to launch Caring for the Whole Person, which trains Catholic health professionals, clergy, and parishioners to support people who are seriously ill and at the end of life. Surveys of participants show increased understanding of church teaching on end-of-life decisions and of resources to help patients, caregivers, and families. Caring for the Whole Person is one of the most significant initiatives that we have undertaken at the California Catholic Conference, said Bishop Kevin Vann from the Diocese of Orange, who was a medical technologist before entering the seminary. The fruits born will not only, God willing, make the extension of assisted suicide legislation in California unnecessary, which it inherently is, but will continue to deepen the church's commitment to Christ-centered communities where every person is loved, wanted, and worthy throughout life's journey. Parish leaders and diocesan teams trained in caring for the whole person provided greatly needed support for homebound parishioners, families with sick and dying loved ones, and entire communities during the pandemic. Leaders were poised to answer questions and offer resources. The Archdiocese of Los Angeles created a hotline called Hearts to Serve that connected parishioners in need with parish-based resources and referrals, including home deliveries of groceries and other supplies. Catholics throughout California rallied behind families during the pandemic, supporting children studying at home or in school. According to Kathleen Domingo, the executive director of the California Catholic Conference, an unexpected benefit of the pandemic lockdown was that many parents had a chance to hear their children's virtual classes. I was one of those parents, and yeah, that was an unexpected benefit. Eyes were open to both the positive and the negative, she said. They learned that their kids are learning amazing things in school, far more than we did at that age. But there were also eyes open to the fact that, wow, my kids are being taught things that sound strange to my ears that are or aren't in keeping with the values we have in our home. In response to the needs of parents, the California Catholic Conference is working on resources to empower parents to advocate for their children, particularly within public schools. As children return to school and parents have a new perspective on what their children are learning and how involved they want to be, we look forward to offering resources for parents to advocate with school boards, share Catholic teaching with their children on challenging topics, and have rich conversations with students about faith and reason, morality and values, and working for the common good. Assisting immigrants has also been a 50-year priority for the bishops. Auxiliary Bishop David O'Connell of Los Angeles has participated in California Catholic Conference delegations to detention facilities for people awaiting rulings on their pleas to remain in this country. Many have lived in the United States for decades, paid taxes, and raised families. In 2018, a CCC delegation visited a for-profit facility in Adelanto, California, a facility that has been the site of several suicides. More than 350 men and women waited patiently for confession and packed into masses celebrated in English, Spanish, and Vietnamese during the visit. There is a huge need for reform, Bishop O'Connell said, for reform to the way we are dealing with these immigrants. It is very sad to see that the immigrants who are in these facilities have basically no rights under the Constitution. Not even their basic human rights are respected. This is a terrible amount of suffering. Thanks to years of leadership from the California bishops and throughout California Catholic Charities in California, Catholics have been at the heart of outreach to the unaccompanied children coming to our state from South and Central America. Through the Immigration Task Force, Southern California Diocese worked together pastorally to care for young people and families, especially as the pandemic forced additional constraints on the ability to welcome migrants and refugees into our communities. The CCC's work with migrants increasingly parallels its restorative justice outreach to reframe how society responds to crime victims, offenders, and their families. The program is funded through the USCCB's Catholic Campaign for Human Development. The vision of restorative justice is to restore the right relationship between people, Bishop O'Connell said. To restore the relationship between victims and offenders, and between offenders, society, and the community, to bring about some healing of all these broken relationships, and to bring healing to broken lives, whether they be those of the victims or the offenders. The CCC has created a bereavement guide for parishes to use in the pastoral care of victims and survivors, including the families of offenders. What do you do if someone comes to the door and someone in their family was killed in a violent crime, said Debbie McDermott, CCC Associate Director for Restorative Justice. Survivors of violent crime and their family members are in grief. They don't self-identify at the store or in church. They just live with their pain. We have to find ways to reach out and invite them in and make them feel welcome and help them deal with their grief. Statewide, restorative justice leaders worked with the incarcerated as well as with families throughout the pandemic, making sure spiritual and material needs were met. The network and the training provided through the CCC creates an opportunity for restoration and peace within a community so often overlooked and forgotten. These CCC ministries embody the mission of the church, Bishop O'Connell said. It's to make present, when there is suffering, the compassion and mercy of Jesus in a real way. And there, we'll share some of these 50-year perspectives from the California Catholic Conference. You know, we've, over the years, relied on the Catholic California Catholic Conference for just a number of issues. They represent all the bishops, as I said, primarily in the California State Legislature. They have several lobbyists as well, and they have people working on just a variety of issues as well. Gabe, we just have so many. I think December must be a big ordination month. I
mean, yeah, it's a big list.
All those names. My goodness.
It's a long list.
It is a long list. And some people don't realize it. A deacon is ordained. And we have three deacons on the list as well.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about that the other day, and I was thinking about how I think a lot of people don't know what all the things the deacons do. And luckily, I'm working on getting Deacon Harold Burke Severs on, who has a book about that. Yeah. So hopefully we can get this, some of those questions answered.
Book. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Both of us should read that.
I was going to ask you, you were talking earlier with our first guest, Rob, about Gil Hodges. And it's funny how, isn't it? It seemed like in baseball only, you as a youth, like grasp onto something from a time before you were a kid. You know what I mean? Like an era of baseball. Like football doesn't really have that. Like I was a Jim. I always thought Jim Thorpe was very inspiring and interesting, but like not the way I did something.
Long time
ago. Yeah, he was he was the second person I think ever inducted into the Hall of Fame, the NFL Hall of Fame. But like with baseball, I was, as a kid in middle school, I was enamored with the 1919 White Sox, with the ones that threw the World Series.
The Black Sox.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And like to the point where like I was in middle school going through microfiche because there wasn't computers back then. That's how old I am. And I had like a file as like a seventh grader on this baseball team and Shoeless Joe Jackson and you know, all these Eddie Seacott and yeah.
That's the movie, Field of Dreams.
Right. And it was before I think I saw the movie, and then I saw the movie, and then there was also the movie, I think it was called The Black Sox. So Charlie Sheen and a bunch of other people that were in that movie. And it was one of those things where it was like, it was so obviously 1919 is long before I was born, but it was just one of those things. It's just like,
Baseball has that kind of history, and like football, it's more the teams, the Green Bay Packers,
right.
This.
Yeah.
Baseball, it's the individuals.
Right.
Ty Cobb,
Yeah. Satchel Paige, all those guys.
And all these old names that you knew the name, and I should know, but I can't tell you who Ty Cobb played for, but I know about Ty Cobb.
He played for the Twins, didn't he?
No, the Twins weren't existing.
Then, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
There wasn't even one person known as Twins. I'm thinking Detroit. I don't know.
The Detroit Tigers. You're right. He played for the Tigers.
Did he?
Yeah, he played for the Tigers. He ended up living in Northern California for at the end of his life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sandy Koufax, a lot of these people, Bob Gibson. I do think that baseball is every little boy's first love.
Yeah, even if you don't play. I never played.
Yeah.
Like professional, organized.
There's something about baseball. You can go to the game and there's this romance to it. And, it is interesting that, I've always wanted to ask the St. Louis Cardinals, were they named after Catholic cardinals or were they named after birds?
I mean, the logo has a bird, but that could also just be
cool
the, you know,
logo. It's got
it
a bird
is.
On either end of a baseball.
Yeah.
Bat. It's pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah. I like that too. Yeah.
But there's just a history there, and it's been part of so many cities. It's part of the character of the cities almost.
Yeah.
It's like if you're a Cubs fan, you're perpetually down and out. The Cubs couldn't ever quite.
Remember the Red Sox, the lovable losers.
Red Sox,
yeah.
The curse of the Bambino.
Right.
You know, all these things.
There is a like mythological thing about it where it's like it must be a curse is why we don't win or yes something
and, you
like
know,
that.
The Rob was talking about Gil Hodges and how he made mass. Well, in the old days, Sunday meant a doubleheader.
Right.
Nobody plays doubleheaders anymore. They're giving away money, they think.
Now,
let's charge them for every
game. Right, exactly.
But I remember the Sacramento Solons here in Sacramento used to play doubleheaders on Sundays. And that going to mass when you're traveling, you go, I mean, it's very doable. Mm-hmm. But they do play every Sunday. That's a big baseball day.
Yeah.
And back then it was 154 games. Today it's 162 games.
Right.
So you're playing virtually every day. And as soon as the game's over, you're getting on an airplane and going someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And Gil Hodges made sure that his faith came first and baseball came second. And although you would never know baseball, he still played darn good baseball.
Yeah, must be.
But it was something that, you know, the fact that I saved his baseball card.
Right.
There was something about him.
Yeah.
That, and it was, it had to do with his character. It had to do with something good that he exuded, if you will.
Right. And yeah, and it's interesting how baseball does have a lot of those parallels, because you think about, like, go to a football stadium, it's, for lack of a better term, open on Sundays, and that's it. Or, you know, Monday night every once in a while. Baseball stadiums, you can go 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday sometimes. You know, it's just it's there. And it's a lot like church, where you go to church, church is always open. You know, you can always, so it's like, and when you, they call, you know, baseball stadiums cathedrals every once in a while and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting the different parallels that either it's rooted in some sort of religion, or the people who developed the game definitely had a mindset along that lines.
Look here in California, the Los Angeles Angels,
Padres,
the San Diego Padres.
Yep.
You know, it's right there.
Well, like you said, there's the Cardinals, you know, the Padres, Angels, the, you know,
Cardinals,
there's,
in this case, were probably birds, but there are some Cardinals.
I think we can pull them over.
Stanford,
that's fine.
Cardinal.
We'll Stanford Cardinal. I was born in Stanford, So it was funny. I wore a Stanford hat the other day, and somebody asked me if I went to Stanford, and I laughed because.
Well, you could say, yeah.
Well, I was born there.
I was born there.
That's what I said. I was born there. I didn't. That was the extent of my academic ability to go to Stanford, was I was born. My stint in Stanford was very short.
It's hurting our grade point average.
Yeah. Even back then. Yeah. My handwriting's the same as it was when I was born. But no, yeah, it's interesting how it's such a, I don't even follow baseball, but it's one of those things where, like, I would go to a game right now if I got tickets. It's like I'd have no desire to go to a football game.
You know,
it's baseball.
I can write. I write a newspaper column. I could pick on pro football, pro basketball, college football, golf, tennis.
Mm-hmm.
Call them names. Do anything. If I pick on baseball, I'll hear from people.
Oh yeah.
Like, this is a silly game. This is too slow, or, you know. If they invented it today, nobody'd play it.
Right.
You know, I'll hear from people. So don't understand. There's a romance with the fan.
Right.
And not so much the players, but the team.
Yeah.
The team.
And that's how they survived in the way of the era of the free agents and all those things like that. They've survived in that way, that they just, people are loyal to their team. And it's funny, because, like, you talk about the people who are, like, for lack of a better term, fanatic about their teams. It's you say, like, one little change you want to make. Like, we're going to make the mound a quarter of an inch higher. And everyone's like, well, let's just throw every stat out since 1800s then.
That's the other thing about baseball, is it's all about numbers. It's all about statistics.
Right.
People will go to a game because somebody on the opposing team has 52 home runs and there's still a month less in the season to break the record. Those kinds of things.
Right. An event.
Yeah, it's an event. Everybody knows the pitcher's earned run average and his one-loss record and how fast they're throwing the ball and all these. It's all stats. Football is just, we just want to know who won the game.
Right.
You know, but
and football, people leave in the third quarter.
If the team's behind.
Yeah, yeah. Where baseball, I mean, people stay. It's an event. I've gone to the Giants Stadium. You know, I went to Candlestick because I grew up in the Bay Area. I went to the A's games, and I got to see the A's play with, I got to see Dave Stewart pitch against Roger Clemens when it was
too bad.
Yeah, A's and Red Sox. That wasn't too bad. But yeah, I mean, and you see these things now, like the baseball where it is now, and then the San Francisco Giants game play now, and it's great. I mean, it's beautiful. You walk around. I mean, if they're losing, you walk around. You know, it's a bad game. You still got cool stuff to check out. And
yeah,
great food. And
it's amazing how, you know, when you think about some of these mascots, that the name sticks once it's there.
Yeah.
But I just thought about, you know, Giants. Who would name a team the Giants?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think there's a college football team named the Giants. But people say San Francisco Giants. They're not even thinking about Giants.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know what a Dodger is.
If you ask the Giants, it's somebody who misses the pennant every year.
Yeah. I don't know what a Dodger is.
Yeah, I mean, Dodger, you know, is like a dog's name.
Yeah.
I don't know. I remember when I was a kid, I had a San Francisco Giants pendant in my room because I met the player Mike Ivey when I was a kid, and I don't even know if he was any good, but apparently I liked him. And it was a picture of Candlestick with a gigantic baseball player standing where home plate would be, but he's obviously 50 feet over the stadium, and he's like swinging a bat. And I remember thinking that was such a cool pendant. But you're right. I mean, no, the Giants. I mean, yeah, it's weird. It's a weird name.
It's a very weird name. Oh, yeah. And the football team was named the Giants too.
Right. That's what they still have to delineate on ESPN. The New York Football Giants.
Yeah, the Football Giants.
I mean, you think about it. Football names. I mean, you've got a team named after the meatpacking industry.
Yeah.
So.
Packers.
Yeah. It's I went to that stadium when I went to Green Bay a bunch of years ago, and they talked about the whole history of it, and it's
Lambeau
just,
Field.
Yeah.
And Vince Lombardi, the famous Vince Lombardi, went to a Catholic school. Fordham. Mm-hmm. He was one of the, you'll like this, 7 blocks of granite on the offensive line.
That's a great nickname.
7 blocks of granite. He had mass for his players Sunday morning early at Lambeau Field. You guys are going to church.
Yep.
Before we play.
Pre-game pancakes can wait.
That's
you're
right.
At church.
That's right.
You think the 7 blocks of granite were throwing the ball a lot?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
All they did was run the ball.
A power sweep.
Green Bay, a very Catholic town. You know, our friend Mr. Ball in Green Bay, the representative of 40 Days for Life,
mm-hmm.
He just loved coming on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's great. He was great. They'd be out there freezing all day and night.
They did 24/7, primarily through the Knights of Columbus, I believe, in Green Bay on 40 Days for Life.
I woke up in Green Bay one morning, and I looked out my window, and it was -2 degrees, and it wasn't even snowing. It was just cold.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the coldest days are when it's clear.
And it was, and I learned that the hard way. Yeah. So, yeah, that was fun.
Oh, the sunshine.
Yeah, there's pictures of me at that game, and I look like I'm about to rob a liquor store. Yeah. I'm all covered up.
Yeah, it's different. But, yeah, good for these guys for making a movie about Gil Hodges and partnering with Catholic Athletes for Christ. And we need more of that. I think we had Mike Sweeney on, too, Gabe, a while ago with the Catholic Athletes for Christ. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink. Of its work I do sing. On it, my Savior.